Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 3 of Street Smarts. I'm Matt Bonavita, along with Nick Shelsey.
Good evening.
Good afternoon, whatever it is.
Seems evening.
It's evening here. We're recording this on March 2nd at 10:13 Eastern Time. It's kind of late, but I had an idea for a podcast. First of all, thank you to the Crusaders featuring Randy Crawford, because they have been our theme song for the last 3 episodes.
Yes, thank you.
I'm not even sure if they're alive, but thank God for them.
I bet they listen if they are.
I'm sure they do. Okay, so here, this is, let me kind of take the lead on this one, because when I listen to these podcasts, I notice that Nick is better than me. He's funnier than I am. But this was my idea, just like his idea for the last one was the top 10 movies, comedy movies of all time, or our top 10 comedy movies. This is my idea. And let me tell you the genesis of this idea. Our topic today is firefighting, reality versus fiction. And Nick and I lived together right up until 2014, when he got engaged to his wife and they moved out. Shockingly, the three of us didn't want to live together.
It would have been a great Three's Company episode. Yeah. Reverse Three's Company.
So, Nick and I lived together for 6 years, right? 2014?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
And so in that time, just from, I guess you would say osmosis, just from being around you.
Osmosis.
No, you know what? That cell's breaking down.
Maybe even photosynthesis.
Osmosis is bad. That's why I'm not a science teacher. I would say that it's more of a... just being around Nick and then
exposure of sorts.
Right. Being around John Serp, being around all of the guys from the firehouse, going on trips, being like an honorary firefighter where we would go out places and maybe 20 firefighters and I'd be the only civilian. And you guys would be talking about Halligans and lines and standpipes.
You know, it's funny. There's a saying. You get a bunch of firemen together off duty in a bar, and all they talk about is firefighting, and you get a bunch of firemen together outside of the bar, and all they talk about is drinking.
Right. Or in the firehouse, they talk about drinking, right?
Well,
they can't do it, but they talk about it.
Right.
Well, I would in these experiences, they were formative for me, because, you know, and this is my experience, so I'm not going to let Nick stand here and talk about He's shy. Nick's not shy. Nick is not one like many firefighters.
Very shy.
Like many firefighters, like many military, they don't talk about the shit they've been through. So I only know secondhand through stuff that he tells me, or through stuff that my other friends tell me about some of these things. And I always wondered, as I come up with conversation, how close to reality things were. And I would just poke it. Like Nick, seeing him every day for, you know, 6 years, I'd poke at him when I saw something on TV and he would generally laugh. So let me start off with this. The idea of firefighting. Nick always talked about, well, fire is an interesting thing because you don't see a whole lot of it. And Nick, what did you always tell me about when you're searching for a fire?
Well, no, I would just allude to the fact that a lot of times if you roll up and there's a fire and you actually see the fire, depending on the type of building, there's a lot of fire science that goes into it. It really is. And it's one of the things I didn't realize about the job.
And there are PhDs in fire science, right, Nick?
Oh, no, of course. Yeah.
Like you can actually go to school to learn fire science.
Sure, sure.
Right.
And, it was one of the things that I actually left my job. I was interning on Wall Street, and I was hired, and then I wound up leaving it. I was very nervous. I didn't know, how do you know that you're going to be good at firefighting? You know, I wanted to make sure that I'd be able to do the job, but then also that it would challenge me mentally and physically. I knew it would challenge me physically, but I wanted it to challenge me mentally, and it really does. And the whole long-winded point of this is what I'm getting at is that a lot of times you go into a building and it's smoke. There's a lot of smoke. So now you have to use your senses and try and find the fire. And sometimes it's the most difficult thing. If it's not showing on the outside through windows or through a roof, or, you know, if it's not showing itself upon arrival, now you have to go find it. And it's difficult enough when you know it's on the third floor or the second floor or whatever, going in, because you don't know what the layout of the building is, especially if it's not your area or your response area. So, you know, it's pitch black. It's a lot of smoke.
But expand on that, Nick, because you're talking about layout of the building. There's an architectural layout. But what other things pop up in going down a hallway?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, it depends. I mean, there's high-rise.
But just an example.
Dwellings, fireproof. There's all different buildings, but...
Someone leaves shit in the hallway.
Right. Well, not
and you
only
you expect
not only
it to be there.
Something in the hallway, but like, let's say you go to a building. It's like a 3-story tenement, but they put up illegal walls. Mm. They subdivide. They make it an SRO when it's illegal.
What's an SRO?
A single room occupancy. It's basically a bunch of rooms occupied by different people. Just one room. It's got a lock usually on the outside, like a combination lock, and then they share common quarters, which would be a bathroom and a kitchen. But you know, if it's not your response area, if it's which you know your response area, you get to get a little bit familiar with the buildings in the area
because you're in them all the time. Right?
You're in them a lot, whether you're doing building inspection, whether you're
and would you say
responding to alarms, whether it be a fire or just a medical run, you get to know the buildings that are in your area.
Right, and being the civilian here, I'm just trying to clarify for civilians. As you say, the response area typically would be what in the FDNY.
The area that you...
No, I mean in terms of, is it geographic?
Yeah,
in terms of mileage, or is it...
It's broken down.
Was it into, population?
It's just in vicinity to your firehouse and other firehouses. Your house is closest to that location. That's really what it boils down to. And you could be first due or second due. You know, you'll be at the same fire, but depending on if you're first to arrive, which is first due, or second due, which is second to arrive, your responsibilities obviously vary depending on the location of the fire, depending on the type of building.
Now, so do you find, let me hold you right there. Do you find the same architecture in your response area? Do you see the same of the same type? Or do you think New York City is just like a roll of dice?
That really depends. I mean, if, you know, certain areas, there are, it's more private dwellings, which are just, you know, 1 and 2 family houses. You know, certain areas there's brownstones, a lot of brownstones. Certain areas it's mixed. You could have Queen Anne's, which are the larger type houses in Flatbush area. If anyone's familiar with that area, with the big wraparound porches, there's high rise office buildings found, obviously mostly in Manhattan. High rise multiple dwellings, where just high rise buildings where people live, not commercial, such as the high rise office. You know, so there's a ton of things that are going through your mind, you know, as you respond.
Okay,
you know?
So when you show up, Nick, Nick, again, as I said, I've said this multiple podcasts, but let me remind you, Nick is a, I want to say 13 years veteran?
Almost, yeah.
Almost 13 years in what, September?
September, yes.
All right, 13 years in September, a veteran. He's a lieutenant now for, in May, it will be 3 years.
Yes.
And you're going to be promoted to captain very soon. Because he did well on the captain's test. This is me bragging, not him, because I'm very proud of him. But what would be in your optimal idea when you show up to a fire, the safest fire for you to enter? Like if you're running into a building and you go, obviously that's an oxymoron, safe fire. But in terms of what would be your optimal fire in terms of like for your crew to be safe, that you're not going to worry too much about a building collapse or shit in, you know, somebody leaving a refrigerator in the fucking hallway or whatever craziness that goes on.
The safest fire would probably be the trash can fire.
or a car
it's
fire.
Outdoors. Actually, car fires can be pretty dangerous.
Okay.
But, That's which okay. is, you know.
But, all right. Building. Yeah, fine.
No, I mean, you know, anything could happen in any type of building. It depends on construction. I could go on and on, but I don't know. I tend to think that the private dwelling.
Well, percentage-wise.
I don't know the percentages, but I would say that anything where you, if things go bad, you could get out quickly, like a two-story private dwelling or two-story two-family, where if things get bad, if the fire's on the second floor, which would be the top floor, and God forbid, whatever, your water problems or whatever the case may be, you're able to get out and get out quickly. And worst case scenario, if you had to exit a second floor window, as long as you don't land in a bad spot, like on your head or whatever, you'll just break a leg or something. That would probably be the most straightforward. But once again, it doesn't matter. You could. It depends on the size.
No,
of the
you
fire.
Could obviously you can get killed in anything, in any situation, including your trash can fire scenario, right? But
that would be a leap.
But let me connect the dots for you, because I know that you Nick is on the job, and Nick is a professional. He won't talk shit about other people. But let me connect the dots for you. Growing up, I was used to the FDNY. I went away to college. I spent 3 years at New Paltz, lived there. And the phenomenon that I first encountered at New Paltz was volunteer fire department, which shocked me. Okay. But I've learned that from maybe you mostly, I think experience, talking to enough guys that, and even them, they said that they don't enter those dwellings. They're putting water on fire from the outside. Therefore, they're not search and rescue. They're literally putting out a fire. Now, some towns, depending on what town you're in, might have a search and rescue part of it, depending on what the fire is. But volunteer fire departments usually fight what you just said, right? Two-story dwellings, which are the quote-unquote safest possible. That's why they can get away. That's basically why these towns can get away with not paying a fire department, because their fires are not fatal.
I don't know. I mean, it's also there are people willing to do it for free, you know. So and you know, there are a lot of guys on the job who are volunteers from where they live, whether they live upstate or
Long Island,
you know,
right.
Out east. Yeah, but yeah, you know, I mean, I can't really speak that intelligently about it because I've never been a volunteer. I know guys who are volunteers, but I know there are a good amount of guys who are on the job who are volunteer firemen, and I know that, you know, it's you know, as far as attacking the fires, I mean, a lot of times the difficulty is that, you know, they're not sitting around the volunteer firehouse waiting for a run to come
right.
in. They got to get paged or called, and then they grab their stuff, then they go to the house, then they get. So by the time all this transpires, it's by the time they get there, you know, it's usually fully involved that, you know, whatever is on
fire.
Please
explain what fully involved means.
Well, you know, the whole thing is you'd be insane to go in there. I mean, it's there's no, you're not saving anything. God forbid if anyone's in there.
Right. They're already dead.
You know, and it's literally probably impossible to get in there because it's you know, the collapse potential and everything else is just too dangerous.
And you just said another word, attacking, which I would translate to, you would say that professional fire departments, especially. And I'll throw these out here, and you tell me if I'm wrong. And this is just from, I guess, you know, being 40 years old and teaching history and knowing something about urban history. My friend Eugene teaches a class called Urban History. They would, I would say, proactive fire department, right? So a city like Chicago or New York or L.A. or Dallas, Boston. You even met a Myrtle Beach firefighter one time on your way down to Myrtle Beach. But then we thought about it, and you said, you know, there are a lot of high-rises in Myrtle Beach because of the hotels that they probably would need a professional fire department because they probably have to go in and do search and rescue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they can't be sitting around waiting for volleys to show up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different animal, for sure. But I think we need to allude to... what we really...
Well, our topic was reality versus fiction.
Before this becomes Buff Fest 2016.
Yeah, and I like it to be Buff Fest because I don't think that anyone knows all of the shit you're talking about. And I think you're very, very... Nick is very, very... One of his better qualities... there's many. But one of his better qualities is he doesn't wear his firefighter t-shirts all the time. Nick will wear them to work out. He'll wear them to work But other than that, he doesn't go out to a bar on a Saturday night in a firefighter t-shirt because he would consider those people buffs. We bullshit. We give John Serp, our buddy, a lot of shit because he does that a lot. Nick will ask him, what firefighter t-shirt are you wearing tonight? Or things like this. This is back in the old days when the two of them were both single. Now they're, you know, John's worrying about spit up and taking the kids to the park. But he does wear his firefighter t-shirts there now.
Yes, he does.
So I started off with reality versus fiction. So my favorite movie in terms of bullshit and firefighting is Backdraft. Now, Nick's wife is a big fan of Chicago Fire, which I can't speak to.
I've never seen it. She says it's great, and the guys are hot. I don't know
that. And one of them looks like you.
She says that one of them, I think she's full of it. I think she just has a crush on him and pawns me off as the reason.
Right.
But Backdraft is awesome. I would think Backdraft is to firemen what maybe Point Break is to surfers.
Or skydivers.
Right. That's a fantastic point. Because it's just, it's wildly entertaining, but wildly inaccurate. And of course, you know, there's going to be some liberty taken, artistic liberty taken. You know, you can't have a movie, you know, you wouldn't understand, you wouldn't see a lot of things, you wouldn't be able to hear a lot of things. So, you know, but it's over the top and we love it because it's a comedy to us. Right. It's the best comedy ever.
Yeah. Now, you just said artistic license. So let me expound on that before we play our clip here. I just did a lesson last week and I talked about artistic license in reference to Native Americans. So we're talking about how Native Americans were treated by Hollywood. I showed them some clips of videos, and there was an artistic license. It was bullshit. Okay? So when we talk about, say, like the movie Lincoln, okay, artistic license is, and stop me if you think I'm wrong, but I would say that, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis won the Academy Award for it. We don't know what Lincoln sounded like, but most historians said he had a high-pitched voice.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So he played him with a high-pitched voice. We don't know that Lincoln and Mary got into a fight about Robert Lincoln joining the army. We do know that the only reason Robert Lincoln wasn't in the army for 4 years is because she had lost two sons already, and Mary was against it. We know this from letters. We know this from her diary. And then we know that Robert eventually enters the army on Ulysses S. Grant's staff. And there's a scene in the movie where Sally Field, Mary Lincoln, and Daniel Day-Lewis, Abraham Lincoln, get into a screaming match about it. Do we know that actually happened? No. But you can assume reasonably that those were their feelings. And creating a fictional scene to create drama is what a movie does.
Yeah.
So the essence of the characters is, don't put my son in the military. And Abraham Lincoln said, he's a man. He can make his own decisions. I'm going to do it. And you had to realize that he took shit because that's his wife.
Right.
And his wife lost two children already.
Right.
So that, would you say that's artistic license?
Oh, of course.
Right.
But I think when you take artistic license for an hour and 50 minutes of a 2-hour movie,
right. It's
more of a fictional, you know.
Right. It's pure fiction.
Mess.
It becomes, you know, nonsense. So now, Nick, you can set up this clip if you like. It's Kurt Russell and Billy Baldwin. Kurt Russell is the older brother. He's a lieutenant in the Chicago Fire Department. Backdraft came out in 1991. This is the movie we're going to use the clip from. And Billy Baldwin is his probie. He's a probie in this, right?
Yeah.
Explain what a probie is for everybody who doesn't know anything about firefighting.
It's like a rookie. It's a guy who just got to the firehouse, doesn't know much, went through the training, is quote-unquote qualified, but has never really been in the field.
Right. And you have the superstar in the movie, superstar lieutenant brother.
Right. Which by the way, just to hop off on that, they would never put two brothers in the same house.
Right. And I could give you the Sullivan rule from World War II. Do you know what that is, Nick?
Is that the Matt Damon, my brother, and everyone else died, so now they have to bring me out. Tom Hanks comes to
right.
The
funeral. Yes, the Sullivans. Okay. Right. Gotcha. The Sullivans, all three Sullivan brothers, four Sullivan brothers died on one destroyer.
Right.
So now they cannot serve together in the army.
Right.
Brothers cannot serve together. So is that the same shit with the fire department?
I would admit there's a lot of similarities that go on between the military and the fire department. you know, but I guess, yeah, I don't know that the origins of it.
Or no, but I mean, is that a policy? Or?
Yeah. No, they would not do that. They would not have
two brothers in the same house.
Absolutely not.
Okay. So go ahead. So the clip is, there's a fire, right? And it's like one of his first fires.
Yeah. And, you know, true to life, I'm actually being serious. The officer, whether it's a lieutenant or a captain, would make sure the probie was close to him, and try to keep an eye on, not literally, because sometimes, like I said, most of the time you can't see if it's a good job. And you know, he's trying to teach him as the fire is going on, and he just drops some pearls of wisdom on him. I could only hope to ever lead like this.
Right, and he's talking to his brother, and there's this whole contentious situation with his brother because, you know, they don't like each other or whatever. So now, just so you know, Billy Baldwin's the younger one. Kurt Russell is the older one. They're running upstairs, and you'll hear an explosion, and that's the fire hitting Kurt Russell, and Billy Baldwin stops, and Kurt Russell speaks first. Okay? So Kurt Russell speaks first, and this is Backdraft from 1991.
Don't take that kind of shit from it! Don't let her know you're scared! Steven! Look out!
You gotta wait for a hose, Steve!
No time!
Okay, so let me describe for you what you just saw. And you can see this on YouTube. It's clip 2 of 11 on Movie Clips, the YouTube channel. Basically, you have the lieutenant saying, you know, don't be scared of it. Don't let it know you're scared. And they break down a door, and he tells them to hold his breath. They have their coats open and no masks on. So, I mean, I don't think we have enough. We're already 23 minutes in, so I don't know if we have enough podcast left for you to explain what's wrong with this particular scene.
It would take me a decade. I love how they make the fire like
an animal.
Like the antagonist, I guess you could say. Yeah, it's like a dragon mythological beast. It roars, it makes sounds, it squeals. It is incredible. There is so many unbelievably things.
Okay, let's just start. Let me keep you focused here. So he says, the first thing you said to me was, the fire like shoots at him. He falls down the stairs. And then he says to his brother, don't be afraid of it. Or don't let it know
you're scared. Don't let it know it's scared. Because, you know, the fire is obviously going to react by your emotions. If you walk in there as cool as a cucumber, it's just going to just hang out. I think also what's amazing about movies is, I understand that you have to see the movie and you have to hear the characters speak. So, you know, I get the fact that they're showing
artistic
what's
license,
going on.
Right?
Right. I get the fact that they, you know, because they have to show what's going on, what the characters are doing, and you have to hear what they're saying. But the fact that in a movie, the fire could be 3 inches away from you, but as long as the flame isn't touching your face, the heat doesn't bother you from the fire. It's fine. It is fine. And they don't even have a mask on. Like, at least if they're wearing the mask and you could hear what they're saying, which isn't realistic, but all right, then it's realistic. It's realistic enough because that's the artistic license that it takes. But it just seems like they talk to, like, I don't know, like a janitor about what it's like being a fireman. I don't know who was the guy on set that they were like, hey, tell me about your experience of fires. He's like, well, you know, there was this one time I went to a fire and it roared at me and I fell down, but the flame didn't touch me. I was cool and I was with my probie, and then we went up and, you know, I could have used a hose line, but I just didn't have time. I just thought there was somebody in this room of flames alive, and I went in there, and sure enough, there was this baby, and the baby was fine. I grabbed it, and we ran out.
Well, that's how the clip ends, was with Kurt Russell bringing this baby out. Again, coat, bunker coat open, no. Yes.
Coat open, no mask, an axe, which in this movie, it serves many a purposes. You can fight fire literally with it. You can break doors, which you can. That's actually a purpose of it. Yeah, you can motivate people with it, which I would imagine if you're swinging it at someone, it would motivate them. But yeah. I don't. It's like a scepter almost.
So they're letting you see. He's saying, "Bring the hose team. Bring the hose team."
And he's like, "No, we don't have time for that nonsense.
Right?
We're going in. I mean, you know."
Now let me just defer real quick here. Again, not to bore everyone who's listening, but I don't think a lot of people understand this shit until you explained it to me. I didn't understand it. In New York City, and most fire codes, I guess, are like New York City. Nick, would you say like big cities close? The standpipe rule. Standpipes are seven floors and up. You have to have a standpipe
above seven. Yeah, okay. You need a
standpipe. Okay, standpipe sends water up from the engine all the way up to upper floors.
Yeah, there's a Siamese connection, which is, if you don't know what a Siamese connection is, it's outside of a building. You've probably either sat on it waiting for somebody if there was no bench, or if you're an idiot, you stuffed garbage into it if the cap wasn't on it. That, and it's colored red or green. Green for sprinkler, red for standpipe, which is what we would connect the hose to, because obviously if a fire's on a certain floor, like 50 stories in the sky, you can't stretch that much hose line from the ground floor up. So, right.
And you gave Nick one time, you know, doesn't talk about this, but he had to go into a fire a few years ago where there was a 6-floor fire and you guys had to stretch a line, but before, you were in the ladder at the time, and ladder does more search and rescue than the engine puts out the fire. You were in the ladder at the time. You said you had to go up with a can.
Yeah, that's the that's just a fire, your basic fire extinguisher, 2.5 gallons
of water.
Just water. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it'll kind of it's clear not going to put a lot out, but right. it'll kind of back a little bit off. It'll kind of get you out of a jam. You know, it could be useful if used correctly. You know, but it's not, obviously, it's nothing of the equivalent of a hose line.
Right. So these guys don't even have cans.
No, they don't. No, they have an axe, and they don't have any.
Right.
And they don't have any air. By the way, it's not just a little. It's not oxygen on their backs. It's compressed air. If it was oxygen on their backs, they would be
live explode.
Missiles. they would shoot out of the building if anything happened. They'd combust. It would just add to the situation.
Right. So you would go in with a can. I mean, obviously, in this situation, you have at least a can.
Yeah, and then you'd have what's called the forcible entry firefighter, which he's got either an axe or a maul, which is a sledgehammer in layman's terms, a halligan, which is like a big crowbar, and what's called a hydro ram, depending on the type of building or whatever, and just to not get into it too much. And it's basically like to explain it, it's a device where you could stick it in the door, and it uses air pressure. You pump it, and it'll force open the door if the conventional tools of the halligan and the maul or the axe aren't working. It's a one-man device. You could really use it to just stick in the door and kind of pump it, and it pushes it out. It'll break the locks if you put it in the right place, and if the door is locked.
And the concepts here are all and the reason I'm bringing any of this up is because none of these exist in this clip, but they all existed in 1991.
Halligans, axes,
cans.
The Hydro Ram didn't. I believe it was at the time the rabbit tool, not to get too technical. Okay. It was the same thing, though. Same concept.
And none of these are moved. None of these are used in a movie. And so not only could they probably not have this conversation because seems to be an absence of smoke.
Yeah. Well, it's there, but it's more of a, you know, an aesthetic. It's not really, you know. But once again, I understand that you have to see, you know. But have the equipment, for God's sake. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. This is It is wildly entertaining. I'll give it that. It is awesome.
It is. Now, do you find that movies, and again, now I'm going to, I you know what, before I ask you that question and movies or TV shows, my question is going to be movies or TV shows being positive or negative. But before I move on, let me give a couple things. I don't watch Chicago Fire. Maybe if we had Caitlin on this podcast, she'd be helping us with this. I will say I asked Nick a few minutes ago about Ladder 49, which was John Travolta and Joaquin Phoenix. I said, was that? And that was, what, 2005, I guess, around? I can look it up. But what did you tell me about Ladder 49 being at least somewhat?
Well, no, that was great. There was the one scene in Ladder 49 where it's Christmas and they go to a fire and Joaquin Phoenix goes in. And you could, it's very hazy. You can see that there's a real smoke condition and he's crawling around and he's stumbling over things and he gets actually caught up in a Christmas tree. And then there's one scene where it actually shows the mask, the perspective of him, the firefighter, and it shows what he would be looking at. And it's his view through the mask and it's black, like not pitch black. It's like dark gray. And that's why it shows, it actually shows that's why he's, because you're looking and you're like, why is this guy, you know, I could see the Christmas tree. I could see the furniture in the room. Why is this guy stumbling all over the place? And then it pans that shot and it shows you, this is what he's seeing. This is it. And that I thought was a really awesome, awesome description of how it really is. Because a lot of times you got these thick gloves on and you got this gear and the mask and you hear yourself breathing. It's like Darth Vader. Like you hear yourself breathing and when you try to speak, it reverberates back at you.
So Nick, do the Scott packs sound like, do they sound like scuba packs? Is that what they sound like when you breathe?
Yeah.
Because I know they use the scuba pack to do the Darth Vader thing.
Yeah, similar, yes. Okay. So, that movie was pretty well done. You know, obviously it took its liberties. I'm not going to pick it apart, though, but it blew me away. That was
pretty right, folks. So just in case you thought our purpose here was to give you just a shit on everything, I'm actually trying to do a thing where you see that maybe you could appreciate someone's perspective and what's total bullshit versus what's at least somewhat close to reality.
Yeah, I can't speak about the the Chicago Fire, and then there was with Dennis Leary. You love that show.
Oh yeah, the FX show, Rescue Me.
Rescue Me. I didn't really watch. I maybe saw one or two episodes. I didn't really watch it, but
I thought Rescue Me did a good, I have no idea on the technical, but I think they just did a good job because, you know, he's suffering from the 9/11 shit.
Right.
So I think they just tried to emphasize that point of the almost the PTSD of it all.
Yeah. You know? From what I saw, it was an entertaining show. It was good, but I really didn't watch. I can't speak about the television shows, but I did see I'll watch Backdraft if it comes on right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. But
no, it's a good movie.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like one of those movies that wasn't meant to be a comedy, but it is awesome. Like Point Break. I keep saying it. Like Point Break was not.
Nick went to see Point Break live with his firehouse last year.
Oh man, it is just fantastic. It's hysterical. Mm. But it's great.
So now let me ask you this. As a professional and you're 13 years in, I'm 18 years a teacher. So I would say that most things I see in pop culture media aren't very accurate in terms of what actually happens in the everyday life of a teacher. Even when they want to paint us in good lights, like Michelle Pfeiffer in whatever.
Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds.
So it's not like Lean on Me?
It's not like Lean on Me. Huh. That Edward James Olmos, which was I can't remember. Stand by Me was when they walked the tracks.
That's Will Wheaton, right.
And then Lean on Me is Morgan Freeman.
Stand and Deliver.
Stand and Deliver. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, right.
And again, I think there are moments where you feel like that Mr. Holland's Opus shit. I'm not gonna lie, the end of that movie it still gets me. I would say that that's very close to it because there's so much shit that goes wrong. That the fact that any kid remembers you 30 years later is amazing. Okay. And I'm not saying I'm the greatest teacher in the world, and I'm only teaching 18 years, but I'll have kids who say some weird, not weird, happily weird things to me later on in their lives, like, you were very influential to me, and you're like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I can't believe that. That the Mr. Holland's Opus thing kind of rings a little bit truer to me, only because he just seems like he's just trying to fucking get through the day, and it turns around, it's fucking 35 years later. That's what it seems in that movie, you know.
What about the principal
with Jim Belushi?
Jim Belushi and Louis Gossett Jr. As the wise janitor,
or the substitute with Tom Berenger.
Oh man, that's another great one. Right.
So I'm sure with teachers, you know, I see a lot of artistic license. Always inevitably there's, you know, some fucking student-teacher affair or some weird fucking shit that has to go on to make the, because it's Hollywood. With cops, you know, I think with cops, those movies run the gamut.
Oh, forget
right?
it. I can only imagine.
From the cops being the greatest. I mean, think about it. The cops being the greatest fucking people ever to the cops being the worst fucking
people
ever.
The most corrupt, yeah, right.
So they, and firefighter movies are very few and far between.
Yeah, and you know, come to think of it, actually, in comparison to teacher movies, to cop
movies, for sure,
we actually have a good deal. I mean, when you talk about like exaggerating situations, I mean, oh my God.
So my question to you is, do you think that fire departments are accurately represented in media, in movies, TV, in media?
I think so. I think we're always shown in a good light. And, you know, you got to remember, it's easy to, because what are we really doing here? I mean, you know, it's no matter what, like where we deal with the public. Yes, we do. But not in the ways that teachers do, not in the ways that cops do. I mean, it's monumentally different. You know, people don't pick up the phone and call teachers to come to their house. Like everybody. It's pretty much universal that everybody doesn't like when their stuff is on fire, whether it's their house, whether it's their car, and they're going to call us and we try to help them and mitigate that situation. So, you know, obviously our dealings with the public is definitely easier.
Can I quote you? You told me years ago, you said, you know, I have to say every time I show up to a job, everyone's happy when I show up.
Yes. Yes. I mean, there are people who maybe aren't mentally stable who
fell asleep
with a cigarette per se and then burned their house down and were upset that we couldn't save it. But that, you know, that happens. I don't know. I can't speak for those
people. But generally speaking, when you show up, people are happy you're there.
Right. Right.
You know, so it's a different mindset.
Absolutely.
Than a police officer who, when they show up, nobody's happy they're there. Usually.
Well, you know.
Maybe the people who called them, but.
Right.
Know.
The people who called them. But even if it's the biggest. You know, criminal in the world, that criminal, I'm sure, has a sister or a brother or a mother or somebody who doesn't want to see them arrested. So, unfortunately, they're always battling situations like that. And it's unfortunate. You know, it's.
Right. It's a different mindset.
Well, just like teachers. I mean, teachers, all they're really trying to do is educate their students in the best way that they know possible. You know, but maybe the student doesn't really want to do that or take that class. And it's not really fair. So there's a lot of things that.
And, you know, sometimes kids getting abused by their fucking boyfriend, or they're a drug addict, or they're dealing with 1,000 other issues that are going on. So if we did a teacher podcast, we'd be here for days, but because I wouldn't shut the fuck up about it. But as I've noticed in conversations that people are very, very ignorant as to what firefighters actually deal with and what it's really like, which is why I wanted to do this little discussion today, because I know a lot of firefighters. Nick and I Nick is my closest friend who's a firefighter, but Nick is someone who never thought he'd go into firefighting, and it just happened to come at him in his life, and now he couldn't imagine his life without it.
Which
is probably a teacher lesson, right?
I guess it is.
You know? Who knew that's what you were going to end up being?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, life takes you on many different paths.
When I speak to my students about career choices, I said I wanted to be a teacher from the time I was 19. My buddy Nick wanted to be a firefighter from the time he got the notice, and he went in and he realized he liked it. So about 22, 23, My brother Anthony, you know, he liked doing events and doing running arenas till he was 26, 27 years old. So shit happens at different times for different people. But I wanted to take, you know, this particular podcast and talk about some of the things that I hear. Nick doesn't run in the same circles. Nick runs with firefighters and they all talk this shit. But this is stuff I hear all the time. I hear from my students, I hear from friends. And so according to this particular lieutenant, it's close and it's good. And it, usually the representation is pretty good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
You know, look, Kurt Russell in that scene is badass.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not very accurate.
Sure, it reminds the guys in my house of my conduct.
Right, I'm sure.
At certain fires, you know. But right. We're not going to really talk about that.
All right, folks. So now we've given you two podcasts to listen to. Please comment if you want on iTunes, which this is also up on SoundCloud. You can email us at streetsmartspodcast@gmail.com. You can grab our information in terms of emailing us personally off of our website, our DJ website, which is Rhythm in Motion, rhythminmotion.biz. You can email Nick or you can email me from there. You know, say you like this on iTunes. Say something nice about us if you like it. If you don't, fuck you. But thank you for listening. And I hope maybe Nick and I both performed both of our duties. He talked about firefighting and gave us some light on it. And I might have taught you a little bit something because this was my idea. And I will take total credit for it. Thanks for listening.
All right. And if I don't see you guys, just remember, keep in touch with yourselves.
I don't know what that means, but thanks for listening, guys. And we'll talk soon. StreetSmartsPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know how much you love us. Peace.